Well, hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Her producer, Lika, is very light. She has to turn her voice up a little bit so I can hear her, or else she needs to talk louder, one or the other. Lika, how are you? How does it feel, the first day on the board?
I have a lot of hope on myself.
I can't hear. We can't hear anything.
Can you hear me right now?
Nope.
Hello?
I can barely hear you, and I can't hear anything in my headphones.
I can't hear anything.
How about right now? Can you hear me?
Nothing.
No, nothing. Hello?
There you go.
There you go.
Oh, that's perfect.
There you go.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's all right. We'll be fine. Relax. We'll be good. Well, what makes Stocks and Jacks? Somehow he's Mr. Brennan Kernan. She is Lika on the board, her first day and running it all by herself. And, you know, we might have a glitch or two, but we'll work our way through it. And she'll be better next time. She'll be fine. S&P futures down 550, Dow futures down 67, NASDAQ futures down 21. Oil's down $1.23, so it's 61.67, so it's given up a little bit of that big run up yesterday. But, we came off our lows in the Sunday night, really in the middle of the night. And yesterday we were, pretty much where we were when we came in the end of the show. S&Ps were down 10 or so. And, the futures. And, actually it was we just hung there like all day long, Brennan. It was really, really strange. Not sure what to expect as people tried to figure out the extent of the damage and, trying to figure out who did what. And now it looks like a couple of cruise missiles were involved. And, I am stunned at how well they seem to know what the facility. Either, you know, you can find the specs online, or whether they hit people from inside, or I don't even want to hesitate to ask to figure out what exactly happened, Brennan. But sure,
maybe the drone technology taking pictures of it from the air, because they some of the pictures that I've seen, you know, the before pictures look pretty detailed, and they had these little red dots on them as to where the drone struck. It's very frightening when you look at what they've disclosed, when you think about what they've disclosed versus what they haven't disclosed.
Yeah, and we're dying to blame Iran, which, you know, who the hell knows. Brennan, we have had leaders, not pointing in fingers at the current people being better or worse. I think this war stuff is a game, and I don't think it's a game. And whenever we read war history, it's amazing to me the lack of common sense. When I say common sense, war is war. And when all of a sudden, one of the first times I read something that absolutely blew me away was they had, this was in World War I. But, you know, people are getting killed. It's war. Not much changes. And evidently the law of the sea was, I mean, the British had... way more battleships than the Germans, right? So in the British mind...
At that time, the British had more ships than anybody.
Yeah, well, in their mind, what you're supposed to do is bring your Navy out, and we'll bring our Navy out, and we'll line up, and we'll shoot it out.
Right.
Well, that's interesting. If you're the ones with 30 battleships, and the other guy's got 10, you know, the guys with 10 maybe aren't thinking that way. So the Germans think of something new, and they come up with the original U-boat.
Mm-hmm.
The World War I submarine, where I'm not so sure you ever really knew if the thing was going to surface again. But
mm-hmm.
And didn't they aim the boat like where the torpedo was and just let it go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say torpedo loose and off it went.
Yep.
And so one day, the British have this ship coming by, and this submarine torpedoes the thing and sinks it. Now, there's all these people in the water, people are trying to save themselves. And so some other ship stops to come back to pick up the survivors. And what do you think they do? They torpedo that one,
torpedo
too.
Torpedo, too.
And so the British immediately hightail it to the Geneva Court, or wherever the place that decides where the rules of warfare are, and say it's unconscionable that you can sink a ship with a ship that's so small you can't pick up survivors. So they essentially wanted to ban U-boats.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans are like, no, you don't get to make the rules. So we've had U-boats ever since, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing, that this idea that the Saudis and the Iranians can have this essentially proxy war going on in
Yemen.
In Yemen, which is the southern border of Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. It's a very small, narrow strip of land.
Yeah. And I think it's been a horrible deal for those people down there.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you're immune to this, I don't know. I mean, I wish they were. I wish this thing didn't get hit. I don't want to get involved, and I don't want anybody getting killed in Saudi. I mean, I want anybody killed anywhere. But what makes you think that this, these things stay these little wars?
Well, they don't. And your analysis about World War One and the installation of the U-boats, I mean, that also goes back to even our Revolutionary War. At that time, warfare was conducted on big open fields, primarily in Europe, with the European armies. You'd have the French army and the British army on a big field. They'd march towards each other. They wouldn't shoot until they got within a certain range. Then the first line of guys would kneel down and shoot, and the second line of guys would be behind them, and you'd have maybe 10 lines of guys, and after the first volley, the guys who were kneeling down would get up and walk to the back and you know, take their place in the next line. And
if they could still stand.
If they could still stand. But they would just shoot at each other, and that was the rules of war. And then you get to the American Revolution, and the revolutionaries would not have stood a chance against the British power at that point. So what did they do? They started hiding behind rocks, you know, what is now referred to as guerrilla warfare of sorts. And eventually they won. War evolves, and you know, if you have the strongest, biggest army, typically you will win. But when you, I mean, we've seen it in places like, you know, Vietnam and China, all over the world, that the forces that have something to really live for or fight for are the ones that ultimately prevail. And they're the ones who change the rules of war.
Well, that's right. I mean, the idea that, that the guys with the rules, you know, it's like if you and I went to the same school as Mike Tyson, mm-hmm. And everything is Marcus of Queensbury. But guess what? He's Mike Tyson, and you and me are you and me.
Yeah.
Well, finally, after 3 nights of this, getting our ass kicked, one of us is going to grab something, be it a gun or a car, and run a guy over.
Yeah. Do you remember the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
when they're approaching for a fight, and Paul Newman goes up to the guy who played Lurch and he goes, okay, first thing we got, and you know, Lurch was like three times his size and was holding a knife, and he's in a fighting position, and Paul Newman walks up to him and he goes, first thing we got to do is establish the rules. And so Lurch lets his guard up and he relaxed and goes, rules in a knife fight? And then Paul Newman places a well-placed groin kick and puts him down on the ground. He goes, you're right, we don't need rules.
You know, I just, plus I don't, I was happy to have you on this morning, being that he's kind of a legal scholar. We have zero, treaty with Saudi Arabia in terms of mutual, defense, correct?
I believe that's right, yes.
So, all the hints on TV, all the talking heads, all they're talking about is, it turns out it's Iran, we need to do something. Why?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't understand the philosophy. Are we there to protect the oil? Are we there to protect Aramco and the oil companies?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, facetious questions, but that's what I expected the answer to be. But there's no legal obligation to do it. And really, you know, when you look at feast and famine around the world and how even places like Yemen or Iraq and Iran, where people are starving, we don't step in those instances. Why would we step in to protect the oil interests?
Well, you just said so. What are your oil interests?
Yes.
We fought a war in Iraq for oil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've been doing this since 1920.
That's true. But to your original question, there's no legal standing that we have to step in and fight somebody else's battles. In fact, that's contrary to the stated purpose of this administration, that we're going to pull away from world leadership and we're not going to be the world's police.
Yeah, but now they feel challenged.
No, they don't. What they feel is that there's a risk that oil prices are going to be stopped for a while. The flow of oil will be stopped. But it's also interesting on the economic front that right after the, what was it, like 5% or 10% of the world's oil was affected by that, and prices go up dramatically overnight, even, you know, we'll see an effect here.
Well,
on the pump.
Oil has a very inelastic demand and supply curve, as they say.
I understand that, but how long, once these things, the refineries are supposed to be back online, at least about 50% of them back online by the end of the week, do you think that either the oil companies could have waited a week to see if that was going to happen, or do you think that 2 weeks from now, if the supply is put back in place, that the prices will drop dramatically in 2 weeks?
Well, it comes down to if you have a you know, and this is a real question. If you buy, let's take something real simple. This is an economic question. It's been around for, you know, since people were trading rocks. If you buy a pound of spaghetti at a grocery store, and you buy it for 80 cents, and you normally sell it for a buck and a half, and all of a sudden something happens on the spaghetti market where the next pound is going to cost you $2.
Mm-hmm.
Do you raise the price on the one you bought at 80 because now you need to replace it, it's two, or are you obligated to sell that one at a buck and a half knowing you have to pay $2 to replace it?
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go back to my other question. What's legally required?
There shouldn't be a law for everything.
I know. But that's the response that you're going to hear is, well, it's legal. It's within the rules of the law that we passed.
Yeah, but the answer...
But morally, I think that you should leave it at 80 cents.
Well, the answer really ought to be... I'm sorry to be dogmatic here, but the answer really ought to be is it shouldn't be your choice. If it's competitive...
If the five
guys around you raise it a little bit because they know they have more expensive stuff coming in, that's as high as you can go. It mm-hmm. shouldn't be your choice. We're so used to having concentrated industries and monopolists that we think people get to make this decision. Mm-hmm. If the world is proper, it shouldn't be your decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, even you, who's you know, not exactly 20 years old, and grew up where there was a lot of competitive industries, it shouldn't be your choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you get into the area that Jeff was talking about, that we talked about on the show a few weeks ago,
yeah.
about the inelastic market and duopolies, not monopolies, which everybody feels is bad, but even duopolies and just having a couple of corporations that control the market, and they set the price.
Well, one of the things that I... really, since we've been doing this show in the last 10, 15 years, I never thought it was going to happen again in my lifetime, Brennan, because in the early 70s, somehow or another, there was a combination, never seen it before since in this country, combination of some people in Congress that had hair up their behind to make things more competitive. They had a lot of input from people in schools like the University of Chicago and Stanford and Duke were the big three, probably. Harvard, not so much, because Harvard likes monopolists. That's where they put their money, their people. saying, and that's when your airlines got deregulated, your truckers got deregulated, and the CBOE, the Chicago Board Options Exchange, was created as a competitive marketplace rather than a specialist marketplace like the New York Stock Exchange was and is.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had a dramatic move towards competition in the early 70s. It's virtually all gone now. The airlines are back together. Trucking, not so much. Trucking's still pretty competitive. Matter of fact, probably one of the few industries you could say is really competitive. It's because it's really easy for you and I to buy a truck and all of a sudden be in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty hard for us to get a slot.
Get automatic driving trucks.
It's not O'Hare where the government can control access and really make sure there's only four airlines left.
Yeah.
A few rounds so they can say it's competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really do anything. Trading floors are all back to being specialists,
mm-hmm.
or a couple of people's. So you've seen that sort of happen, and in the oil industry in the last 10 years, OPEC ain't worth a crap. Really, I mean it's marginally of some sort, right? Because when you have pricing power, and this is the principle. If back in the day. When OPEC controlled 45% of the market or something, in an inelastic market, say the price of oil was $50. If they somehow restricted supply of their oil by 10%,
mm-hmm.
and they could drive the price up 25%, if you do the math, hey, that's a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because now instead of selling, you know, 100 barrels of a day, you're for $50, you're selling 90 barrels a day for $70. And if you do the math, you end up with more money.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, if you have to pump less oil.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now, there's 20 or 21 countries, I counted them up one day, they're actually in this oil export business. Some big, some small, a lot of them small. But it's a whole different world. I'm going to say that OPEC controls 20-25%, which still is a lot.
It's a lot.
But under no circumstances can they restrict their production by 20% and have the price go up 30.
Mm-hmm.
They're losing if they do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is a whole different in terms of market power. It's like if you got a huge corn producer in Illinois, and he goes, I don't like the price of corn. Screw it, I'm not growing any corn. So what? The market's so big, I'm going to say the price of, if the guy owns 8 square miles of Illinois, the price of corn probably goes up a cent, half a cent, right? Because no one person impacts the market at all.
Well, so long as the demand is still there, and you know that's what we see now with soybeans, with China coming out of the market.
But that's a massive amount of demand. Mm-hmm. It's a whole country out.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's restricted. A lot of it is restricted. But it's really affecting the people up north because they delivered west.
Mm-hmm.
The people in Illinois have not been impacted as much. They can at least sell something.
Mm-hmm.
But no, what I'm saying is oil. The we continue to give OPEC this, we genuflect in front of them. And the fact is, they've got 1/10 the power they did 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Venezuela's not a power right now because of the political upheaval there. The United States has increased its fracking, so its oil production is up. So you're right. It's spread around a lot more. But what do you think is the immediate impact going to be if the administration goes to war and takes some military action against Iran for this?
Are we going to do the same thing that Saudi's doing? First of all, we don't mind. What exactly is this war in Yemen all about? I have no idea. I hope you do.
I don't know that much about what it is.
But it's been going on forever, right?
It's been going on for a long time, and the Saudis apparently have cut off supplies and are starving the people in Yemen. And I don't know if it's a religious battle. I don't know.
Well, so the Iranians are supplying one side. I used the alliteration yesterday, the Spanish Civil War. Is that where we are here?
Yeah, similar to that. There's a group called the Houthis, which are in Yemen, which are the ethnic group that is there, and they are closely aligned with the Iranians, and the Iranians are supporting them. Now, what I don't know is if there's a natural alliance between the Houthis and the Iranians.
They're probably both Shia, yes.
Or if the Iranians are there because they're anti-Saudi.
Well, it could be either.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I mean, we were in Afghanistan originally when Osama bin Laden was our boy, for lack of a better term, because we had to be there to mess with the Russians. We couldn't just leave it alone.
Right. Although, you know, I remember when Russia went into Afghanistan, what was it, back in the late 60s, early 70s? And that was their quagmire. It was referred to as their Vietnam for many years. And then what happens? We go in and do the same thing.
If you would have walked into a quiet library or a loud bar in 1974, maybe, and if you would have said, In 20 years, the Russians are going to be out of Afghanistan,
and we'll be in.
They would have went out and bought a few straitjackets for you. I mean, the thought of that happening. Mm-hmm. We were giddy that was their Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
And we got the mess and supply the guys killing them the way they sort of messed and then supplied the guys messing with us in Vietnam.
Absolutely.
We were ecstatic that we got to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, of course, we left the people there high and dry, like we always do.
Mm-hmm.
And Osama bin Laden turned around to hate us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even though we're the one who trained him, right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, if you know the whole story to this, you got to shake your head.
And you look at a lot of the animosity now between Iran and the United States, and that goes back to the Shah of Iran, when the Shah was put in power by, guess who, back in the 1950s, and held power until 1976, 78, when the uprising took place and the U.S. Embassy was captured. There's a long history there as to why the Iranians don't trust the United States, and vice versa, why the United States doesn't trust Iran.
Well, I have this book, a contributor and listener, Gabe, and it has to do with the U.S. I should bring it in because I started reading and I'm going, I can't make it through this thing. It's the U.S. history, essentially, in the Middle East. And we were there from the get-go, you know, fighting the pirates and this. Just the first 20 pages is the Cliff Notes version of what happened, like, every 2 years. We've been there forever doing God knows what. And when the oil was discovered, then we couldn't leave the place. I mean, we were all over it because our oil companies are not saying we should leave or not leave. But all I'm saying is there is a history to this.
Oh yeah, yes.
And S&P futures up, down $5. Dow futures down 60. Nasdaq futures down 18. We should be right back with Mr. Joel O'Connor.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Bam, right in the saddle. S&P futures down 3.25 only. NASDAQ futures down 9.25. We've got Dow futures down 53, so we're down a little bit, but not much. Fed is starting a two-day meeting today. They'll have the announcement and the press conference tomorrow. Of course, everybody's eagerly watching it, even the president with his Twitter feed. I'm going to guess a quarter point decline, although it'll say in a minute these long-term rates have come back up some, so the inversion is nowhere near what it was. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 37.3. We've got the FTSE up 11.1. Kekeron down 94 cents. Let's call that one flat. So not much going on there. Nikkei up 13. Call that flat. Shanghai down 52. That's 1.7%. Hang Seng down 334, 1.2. We've got bonds. 10-year, 1.81. Again, it's up from 1.48 pretty strongly in like 10 days. The Bund, minus 0.49, which is a 30 basis point higher or less low than it was a while ago. Japan, minus 0.15. Oil is dropping off today a little bit, down $1.09, but still 61.81. Brent's down $1.08, 67.94. Natural gas, 267. RBOB, 174. Still nowhere near the $2 it was. I'm going to say, was it like the turn of the New Year's Eve or something? It was like $2, Brennan, last year. And we've got gold down 390, 1507. Silver down nine cents. Lika, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, Chicago. Good morning, Phoenix. Current weather in Chicago is 65 degrees with a high 77 and low 64. Mostly cloudy with a 90% humidity. Phoenix weather currently is 77 degrees with the highs 99 and the lows 83 with a little bit of clouds and 20% of humidity. Chicago traffic volume looks pretty good and smooth for this morning. We have only one accident reported. And it's way west at I-94 at Tri-State, north before Hinsdale. Overall, the traffic looks fine, just some slight delays in downtown. And Chief?
What do you think, Branch? You sound like you're a college teacher.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah. But she's got that...
just starting.
She sounds like she's just got her head out of a book and she's like reading a summary.
Yes, yeah, it'll improve. What I'm doing.
Yeah. So if I were you, I'd be careful, Brendan. You find out yesterday. You always seem like you find out things about these ladies as you go. Turns out she's a certified yoga instructor, and she was ready to whipped the whole office into shape yesterday, and I don't know. Do you think we're ready?
I can tell that you're already looking different.
Yeah.
You are looking so different than last week when I saw you, so you must be doing some
yoga. Well, she was over. She says, well, here, you can start with these, like, easy stretches right in your chair. And I go, no, wait.
Yeah, that's my hour of vibrations.
Yeah. I said, I got to get my stretch pants and everything on first.
Yoga pants.
I don't know if I'm ready for that. Well, yoga pants are different than stretch pants?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, God, I wouldn't even know that. Oh, well.
Yoga pants are so much better.
Oh, God.
The best thing.
Do we have Joel? Is he with us?
Yes, we do. I'm bringing him on the air right now.
All right, well, if you get him, we'll talk at him. If not, we'll keep going. Again, we're rallying here a little bit. We're almost unchanged. You're
Joel?
There, bud? How are you?
Good morning.
Chief, you cut me off last week before I said go blue. Do you realize that?
I'm sure I didn't.
Probably it was my fault.
Okay. All right. So if Janika did it, then it's okay. But if
Chief, you can try it again now. Okay. You can say it at the beginning and the end.
No, she's very plush. She's learning. And if she cuts you off a little bit, you know, well, you know, she says, "So what? As they say in Washington, you're collateral damage."
Yeah. Well, Chief, do you want to start with the Michigan Wisconsin game or the Northern Oil?
Yeah. Well, let's do a little oil first. What do you make of this?
Oh boy. You got to see follow through yesterday's high, I think. Because I see the news out that, you know, it's going to be a lengthy delay now. So you would think that because of that, they'd tack another $2-3 onto it. No can do so far. Yesterday's high, 63.38. We currently only traded 62.59. Actually, we haven't even cleared the close from yesterday at 62.90. So important to get that follow through, but I know you play the XLE in those other stocks. I hope you weren't hedged over the weekend and you came in naked long.
We actually had some short calls, but we were like the 62 level, and we were able to run them up to the 62.5 yesterday out a week for even money or a 2 cent credit. So we're fine because it's leaking down a little bit today. So we're half an hour in the money. So we're right there. That's cool.
Good. Okay. So that's it. I mean, the oil stocks didn't quite, I mean, oil really bounced around, but a lot of the oil stocks did open near the highs of their sessions, didn't get, even get to their pre-market highs. So I think just even in like your Exxon Mobil here, I mean, you had a big update, but you had a red bar. So
yeah.
I use that 75.18 high and 75 just above that. I wouldn't even get too faked out if it cleared 75 because I'm seeing a trio of highs at 75.5. And another thing to keep in mind is those stocks had a nice run going into that. Exxon Mobil in August traded down to under $67. Here you are at 76. Sometimes that's how much it moves, like, you know, in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. So you have to take that into account if you're chasing those stocks.
Is there any hope at all for the Schlumberger? I mentioned yesterday it finally cleared 40, and I bet everybody would be like the commercial for the credit cards. Everybody's going to be out playing whack-a-mole with the thing.
And yeah.
Surely it's almost down to 39 again this morning.
Actually, nice running that as well. But just look at your dailies, Chief. 40.59, 40.69, a couple highs there. I only got to 40 and a quarter yesterday. I guess for the positive, you get that close over 40. I think that's a psychological move, but you can't be upset about the move that it's had just in the month of September, about at 31.11, and getting over 40 yesterday. That's a 25% gain there. You can't.
Where was
you
it?
Can't be upset with that.
Where was it a year ago? 79, 78, or a year and a half ago?
Let's see.
It was up there.
It was up there. I mean, let's see. It was $70. Back in July of 2018.
Yeah. Hey, quick question before you talk Michigan, Wisconsin. What do you think this bill in California's got any legs? I was talking about this last night at the club with my the dark Kevin Beldo.
East Bank Club, Chief?
No, over the Buckingham. I used to be a member of East Bank Club, but now you can't park anywhere over there. So I'm over just at the Buckingham, close to work. But the is this? Are we? It seems to me that even though the Irish are ranked seventh, which is probably a giddy spot for them, that there's three teams in this country who are so much better than everybody else. And I think the people in California are pissed off that they think those guys are paying people from California to come play there. And they're trying to pass a law saying you can pay football players to keep them in California. You think that has legs?
Absolutely. To pay high school players?
No, college players. College players.
I mean, college players. I don't think that has a chance in hell of getting approved, passing legislation. It's ridiculous. Don't they have anything else to do since they work on their earthquake control or fire protection or something? There is actually a bill like that.
Well,
it's getting pretty far.
It's getting pretty far. Yeah. Well, I mean,
I have to do a little research on it.
Well, I mean, do you think that they? Are dumb enough to think that all their best kids are going to Clemson and Georgia and Alabama because people like girls with makeup on, or what? I mean,
maybe they should improve their programs, and then they wouldn't have the players leaving. I mean,
well,
the players can go when they want. I mean, I don't know how far it's getting in Congress or whatever, but
it's not Congress; it's the California legislature.
It's the California legislature,
and that I think is going to be the hang-up because it's going to be state by state, which is going to be conflicting. But remember, a couple of years ago, when that kid from UCLA sued because his image was used on the games, and he wasn't getting a cent out of it, and whether or not UCLA or anybody else could use his image without his permission, I think we're getting closer to allowing college players to get paid something.
Well, Dr. J's brother Paul, one of the nicest men I ever met. One who died from Lou Gehrig's disease a few years ago. He played for Cal Berkeley. This was a long time ago. Matter of fact, he was the other linebacker from Ron Rivera, who was the coach of the Bears and another coach of, and he and Ron are real tight. But he got a job during the summer as a model, and we're not talking about, Playgirl model. He was like modeling like flannel shirts for like Hudson's Bay or someplace. Wasn't naked or anything. And they said, oh, no, you can't do that. We own your likeness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
You're talking about Ed O'Bannon, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, O'Bannon was the guy I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Yep, Ed O'Bannon, I remember him.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan game?
Yep.
Oh, boy, Chief. The Harbaugh haters are lining up for this one, man. They are waiting to throw the hammer down on him on the road to Wisconsin. I'll give you the glasses half empty. offense looks absolutely horrible. No changes from last year. Our top receiver's out, and we're a little banged up on the offensive line. I'd like to see John Runyon come back. He was all Big Ten last year. The glass half full is Harbaugh was saving stuff. Didn't want to show anything against Army. They're going to break it out against Wisconsin. And also, you know, Wisconsin beat Central Michigan, you know, and I think Our Lady Sisters of the Poor, South Florida.
Yeah.
So you could say, you know, and look what Maryland did, right? Maryland beat up on a couple teams, and then they had a real game, and they got squashed. So we'll see. I am not optimistic. I know I like to talk about the spreads. If Michigan was a favorite, I would be all over it, but they're 3.5-point underdogs, so I don't know. Wisconsin just seems tough on paper. They got to stop Jonathan Taylor and go blue, and now you can let me go.
What about, well, real quick, Irish 13.5 against Georgia. I don't know if that's enough.
Oh, man. You know what? My dad's golden rule was never give more than 7. It's in Georgia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, you know, they could be up 3 touchdowns with 1:47 to go, and you know, they're playing to prevent defense and are up, you know, up 20 playing to prevent defense. They scored a touchdown, win by 13, and yeah, you're left holding the bag. So my golden rule is never give more than 7.
I would agree with you on that. But anyway, take care of yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
Double go blue.
The S&P futures, we're back to unchanged here. Wow, actually we're up a quarter. NASDAQ futures up $1.50, so we've come right around to being up, not much. We have the Fed meeting today and tomorrow. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
We'll be right back.
she's a good girl. Loves her mama, loves Jesus, in America too. She's a good girl. It's crazy about Elvis.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Lika on the board with a nice song there. Is that, I don't know if they could play that for the girls in the Lago. I don't know if the, the girls there are a little tough, I think. I don't know if they, the song's about them. S&P futures down 25 cents. NASDAQ futures up 75. We've got, we were down a little bit this morning. We're down like 5 when we came in, and right now we're unchanged, which normally, we're somewhat, normally, if there's such a thing as normal these days, we are usually pretty steady before Fed meetings, and all the meetings now are 2 days, so they get two tuna fish sandwiches instead of one. Brandon, what do you think? Look, do we have Kenny Pulcheri, or are we about to? I'm guessing we don't. The
we're about to. I just found his phone number. I'm calling him right
okay.
now.
Okay. There we go. We're working our way through. It's her her first day. Matt Weber is up in Vancouver. Probably drinking all kinds of craft beers up there. It's a craft beer capital of the world, that place.
It's a beautiful city. Oh, I love it up there. I love it up there. Both Vancouver and Vancouver Island, you know, over in Victoria, right across the water from there.
Well, you can actually, I think you can leave your boat in the water like all winter. Maybe
you can.
And you can probably live on it.
Surprisingly, and I mean, people think about Canada and being cold, especially over the wintertime, but both Victoria and Vancouver Island and the city of Victoria or Vancouver are really, really pretty moderate and temperate, even in the wintertime. The water doesn't freeze up there, or even in the by the harbors.
Well, if you go skiing, you got to go up the mountain pretty far to have snow.
Yeah, up to Banff.
No, you know, there's a spot there.
Banff you're right.
Banff is over in
British Columbia.
No, actually, it's in Alberta, I think. I went to Banff. Banff's it's near. You fly into Calgary, so it's near Calgary.
You're right. Okay, you're right. Up by Lake Louise.
God, is that the weirdest place? When you go to, like, actually, Lake Louise is one of the places, and you're not used to going to a ski resort where there's no trees. So the chairlifts are just kind of hanging up in the mountains, but they look weird.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a.
But you're right. In Vancouver, I've been up to the top of the mountain just outside of Vancouver, where. Taking the chairlift up there for, there's a really nice restaurant up there that gives you a really beautiful view of the city of Vancouver.
We should probably turn the music off at some point here. I'm sure she's on the phone with Kenny. But hey, back to the Fed.
Is the Fed going to drop rates again, and how much are they going
to
drop?
Well, the president wants them to drop them like a point.
Well, I mean, he wants them to go to zero. He wants them to drop 2.5 points to zero.
It caused me, Brendan, to look at, and I guess I'll repeat them a little bit. It caused me to really look this weekend into what the European Union, European Central Bank, has actually been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea their balance sheet was that big. They were doing 80 billion euros a month in 2018 or 16, whatever it was. Their balance sheet's 4.7 trillion.
Hmm.
And they own 375 billion euros of Italian debt.
Mm.
So where's the end game there?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, so every month now, those guys go out and offer debt. People buy it, and these guys buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're supposed to have this, you know, only 3% budget deficit, those kinds of things. We've just said, whatever you guys do now, we're just going to buy it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't imagine that that's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it appears to be.
Well, what do you think is going to happen now that Draghi's gone and Lagarde is taking over? How is that going to impact them?
He put this policy in place, and he says,
I know he put that right before he walked out of the office, but, you know, how do you think the new leader, Lagarde, is going to respond to this, and what's she going to do in the future?
At this point, only a man, and I say this every day, and I'm not trying to hit anybody personally, but only a man of that sort of ego, or you just push it off till the next person blows up. I mean, when you've done 4.7 billion of a strategy, and a trillion, I don't even know what a trillion is, of a strategy, and your only response is the strategy had to be perfect, I just didn't do enough. Instead of saying it doesn't friggin' work,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I guess the part can that I have know. I have trouble even.
Can you? Are you here with us?
Kenny, you with us, bud?
Yeah. Hey, what are you doing? I thought you forgot about me.
No, we have a first day girl on the thing, and she's doing good, but she's a first day. So she found your number like a couple of minutes ago. Anyway, we're just talking about the European Central Bank issues and how, Kenny, this weekend, I don't know, I had nothing to do. It was pouring rain, and I dug through their balance sheet. I had no idea they were that big, that they have $375 billion worth of Italian debt they own.
Yeah. Well, they've been buying everything up, right? Now they're going to buy more of it up after their announcement last week. They're just going to keep buying. They launched another QE program. So we'll see. They're going to have a lot more Italian debt, apparently.
I mean, their Fed balance sheet's bigger than ours, 4.7 yeah. trillion euros.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I know. It's unbelievable. The numbers become mind-numbing, and then, you know, the programs, the stimulus programs become, you know, mind-boggling as well when you think about the size of them. I mean, look what you just said at that. $300 billion worth of Italian debt, just the Italian debt. Never mind the other debt.
But you would never tell the Italian people, you and our people, you would never say, hey, you bleeps, just run the press and spend what you feel like. And yet,
right.
Every month, these guys are going out and saying they're borrowing, you know, 2 billion euros from somebody.
Yeah,
and the ACB is going and buying the paper and creating the money for it. I mean, the two-step process, what percentage of the world even understands that's what's happening?
Well, a very small percentage of the world, I think. And then the other issue is this has been going on for basically a decade now, right? I mean, it all started during the crisis, and I get it at the time, you know, I guess the world needed it. But I guess the question is, how are you going to get out of this now? You know, you're not going to get out of it overnight for sure. Going to take you as long to get out to get in, but they're still getting in. They're not even getting out anymore, right? They just announced a new program to get in even more.
Well, I mean, there's no way the Italian budget's balanced.
No, not at all. The Italians can't even put a coalition government together. Did you see the news yesterday that the former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi now is splintering away from the Democratic Party and creating a whole new party? Which is only going to challenge, you know, the most recent coalition government that they tried to stitch together.
These guys, it's harder than trying to them to agree on a linguine recipe. I mean, you know, the thing that stays stable is you spend more than you take in,
right?
And as long, but with no plan in place to deal with that at all. I just wonder, Kenny, as we're aging together, and we see a lot of the young guys like spout off on infrastructure program or this kind of program or that kind of program. There's all kinds of different ways to split this hair. I mean, if you're spending money to invest in the future, that's one thing. If you're just throwing money at projects just to give people money to do God knows what, that's quite another thing. I mean, I don't hear any detail anywhere in any plan. And every time I hear a plan without detail, I just shudder.
Yeah, well, I agree. As most people, we should all shudder, right? Because that's what's going to be dangerous. And, you know, you talk about what's going on in this country right now in the middle of the election cycle. You listen to the Democratic Party. You listen to what they want to do, how they want to do it, how they're going to pay for it, how they're going to, you know, really what the plan is. And it's mind-boggling to me. That they just want to take, and they're just going to, you know, once you open that door, Elizabeth Warren starts with this 2-cent tax on, you know, the ultra rich, and once you open that door, then it's going to be a 5-cent tax, then it's going to be, well, now we're going to go from the ultra rich down to the rich, and then it's going to be a 10-cent tax. At what point do you say enough is enough?
Well, I mean, both parties are, the Republicans want to soothe their people by this trickle-down theory, we give everything to people with money, and by the way, you lower their taxes, and the trickle-down theory does not work. And then they refuse to raise the taxes enough to pay for the stuff they want to do. And the Democratic Party wants to raise taxes, and they have these programs that don't work. So, I mean, and yet there's nobody in the middle that says both of those ideas really kind of suck, and we need something different. And we never seem to see it. And I don't know how we're going to, If I was gonna take a shot at the entire, actually there's a few people on the Democratic platform I think are pretty bright, but they're also pretty young.
Yeah.
But you need to go out and hand Elizabeth Warren and Biden, and it was not Biden so much, but the other guy, Bernie. You need to walk up and then hand him a calculator. I mean, clearly they got to. I mean, these numbers don't add up
Bernie,
at all.
I don't think Bernie wants a calculator. I don't think it makes. I don't think he cares. I think he just wants what he wants, right? But I think Bernie, you know, if the last debate that was on last week, I hear you, but I think there's going to be a shift amongst those, at least those 10 candidates, because I think people are going to start to think, you know, Biden and Warren and Bernie, they're all in their mid to late 70s, and I think there's going to be a fundamental shift that they want something new. And I do think that, some of those younger candidates are going to start to rise to the top, I think.
But every one of them is 8 to 12 years away.
I don't think so. When you look at what happened in 2008 with Obama, he had just a little bit of experience as a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
There's somebody going to come out of nowhere. It may not even be one of the 10 who are up there right now. I agree with you, Kenny.
I didn't say they wouldn't be elected. I said they're too early.
You would have said the same thing about Obama in 2006.
And I did. He was in there way too early. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should be president, in my opinion, if you're healthy, between 65 and 73. First of all, I don't want to pay you for 50 years after you're out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
and supply you with the security guards for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, Clinton, I think the world would have been a better place, maturity-wise, and everything, if Bush would have won the second time, and Clinton would have been 4 years older when he got in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, he wouldn't have been chasing skirts all over the White House. He might have been able to do his job. I mean, right? I mean...
I don't know about that last point.
Maybe
he
still would.
Right, I don't know either. I think he still would have been chasing.
I think he still would have been looking for blue dresses.
That's possible. Yeah. I mean, there's a chance that when you grow older, you like learn a little bit. I mean, personally, I would look back and and I've always been somebody who tries to learn what you can. But there's no way that I would be anywhere near as qualified 30 years ago for anything as I am now, except for softball or golf.
Yeah. No. Right. You know, I hear you. I'm just thinking, all I said was, you know, that the I think there's going to be a younger candidate that emerges. I don't think it's going to be a 40-year-old the way Obama was, or Kennedy, you know, was, or even Clinton. How old was Clinton? He was 42 or 45, wasn't he?
A little bit, 45, 48, something like that.
Yeah, I think probably, my guess is it's going to be somewhere between 45 and 55, the candidate that rises to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, who is that?
It may not be somebody on the podium yet.
Well, that's possible. But I mean, the guy from South Bend is real bright. He's too young. The guy from South Bend,
Buttigieg.
I think is too young, but he might end up being a vice president.
I think so too. If he was a vice president with somebody like Joe Biden, for example, you know, he would attract a lot of folks, and he would appeal to those who are afraid that Biden is too old or would die in office.
Yeah, but do you think there's a conversation about this? That do you think in the end that his sexuality is going to get in the way of him?
Ultimately, no. If this were 15 years ago, yes, but I don't think it matters right now.
Yeah, you don't think I don't. I don't think so either. But I think there's, you know, in the middle of the country, I think there's people that frown upon that, and I think that's where he's going to have. Oh, I like the guy actually. Which
I think he's got some very good ideas, and I like him too.
And I think he's methodical in the way he speaks, and
yep.
I think he's very well presented, but I think just as a presidential candidate, he's just a little bit too early. What's he, 37 years old? So
yeah.
He's just a little too early.
He's just over the constitutional barrier of 35 years old, so he's pretty young, and we'd be paying him Chiefs worry, we'd be paying him for a long time, even if he served 8 years.
We'd be paying the guy for 60 years.
Listen, I gotta tell you, I think the swipe that Julian Castro took at Biden also was, I think that reflects poorly on him.
It does. Absolutely.
When he was wrong. He was wrong.
He was
wrong.
Well, the last thing you want when the party, Matty Weber did a lot of the math, and he's not our election, whatever, maven, but he went through the math, and you could pretty much talk at last election of the African-American people that did not come out and vote,
mm-hmm.
was really the difference in the couple of states that mattered.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm sure other people too, but by and large, that statistic stood out there. The last thing you want is this ditz from California. If Joe Biden ends up being the Democratic candidate, is for her to brand the guy a racist.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's not.
Yeah.
And what purpose does that serve if you want to win?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, we go after his voting record, do something, but the term racist, I mean, if you went I'm sure, I don't know how many people listen to her, but the last thing you need is if that guy's running for African-American people to stay home because she called him a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, that's stone cold ignorant in my mind.
Well,
yeah,
I don't think
it does anything for the process, and I don't think it does anything for the country to pull out those words because they're inflammatory, it's unnecessary, it's not true. I think it's politics is a dirty game, but I think it's the wrong way to go.
Well, the idea that you knew people 40 years ago that were racist,
right.
Well, we all did.
Right.
And I news for you around. Yeah.
Racism had a lot of meaning then. Yeah,
that
is generational.
Was different. That's not today's generation. It was mm-hmm. what he was. He was born and he lived when he lived. You can't change that history.
He listened to record players.
Yeah. By the way, if you're really into music, you're still listening to record players.
Vinyl's making a comeback.
And you call them turntables.
It is making a comeback. But that was funny. You know, when he ever said turn on the record player, I'm going, oh, my God.
At least he would have said turn on a turntable. We'd have, would have given him a
break. Or a Victrola.
Or the Victrola.
Yeah, a Victrola.
I can see Kenny having one of those. Did you ever have a little record player to play the 45s? I did when I was
of
really
young. Oh, I had one of those,
It was in my grandparents' basement. A little 45, and he had a stack of 45s that was so... I forget who sang that song, 16 Tons. Remember that song, 16
Tons? We should have that one of our lead-in, Another Day Older and Deeper in Debt.
Deeper in Debt, exactly.
He had to be a good line for a song.
Record was always on his...
Well, I mean, we should put that in. Right now, how many people feel that way?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. That's actually a great song for...
Oh, God. Well, Kenny, we gotta let you go, bud. SP Futures down at 250. By the way, oil, is this going to... 2 weeks from now, we're not going to remember this, or we are?
No, I think what happens, I don't think you're going to remember it. I think, listen, the world's a very different place. If this had happened 10 years ago, it would have been a bloodbath in the markets and everywhere. Today, it was very interesting yesterday to see, oil spiked, but the market didn't fall out of bed because I think it's a different world. We now produce all of our own oil, basically an export, and so therefore the oil market's a very different place today. So I think in 2 weeks, this is going to be kind of, you're going to forget about it, they're going to bring it back online, and, you know, whatever happens in terms of punishment or sanctions, more sanctions on Iran is one thing, but for the markets, I think, in 2 weeks, this will be like history.
Okay. All right, Kenny, thank you very much. Take care of yourself. SP Futures down 2.25. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
Something happened. Hello, welcome to Jackson. I'm Tamari, Mr. Brendan Cornan. So Jeff Joseph, and we have Lika on the board. You feel like it feels like you're getting stronger over there, Lika, are you?
Yes, little by little. Step by step.
Step by step. What was that, the Stooges? Step by step.
Niagara Falls.
Jeff, not sure he's got headphones.
The mic.
Well, you gotta find a mic. There you go, there's the mic. We have found the mic. We're good to go. He went to talk and found out there was nothing in front of his mouth. Hey, where's the mic?
Good morning.
Good morning. Make sure Jeff's mic's on, Lika. We were talking about a lot of stuff. I was astounded yesterday by everybody's convinced that if Iran was behind this, that we need to do something with Iran. My question, Jeff, is why? Am I missing a treaty there, or did one day sneak one by me, or what?
Well, that's a good point. As a non-interventionist, right?
You want
to take every step to avoid a conflict. There's posturing. That's not untypical of that kind of regime prior to any type of purported negotiation or discussion, to try to flex their muscles a little bit on the way in. So I don't think we should be totally surprised by the action. We've seen it with North Korea as well in the past, right? But to your point, it's not like we have an immediate obligation here other than to the stability of oil prices, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Well, how far does that go?
Well, it can go pretty far.
Well, the other question
is, it's oil.
What kind is a proportional response? I mean, Trump has talked about a proportional response, but does that mean taking out some oil refineries in Iran? Does that mean hitting installations where there are people present? Because the last time he pulled back because of the threat of killing 150 civilians.
Right.
Would this be an attack, a military attack on something that where people would be present or not?
Let me back up a hair on that one for both you gentlemen, because I'd love to have your maven opinion. When you're involved in a proxy war like Yemen, and Saudi can't wait to throw arms and stuff at one side, and the Iranians can't wait to throw it at the other side. If your people aren't dying, but you're in essence behind all the killings, are you already at war or not?
if a tree falls in the forest.
Is this a college exam?
Right.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, even if Iran did it, to me, they're already at war. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, you could make that argument. I'm not so sure. I mean, I'd fall on that side. But where does it stop? So if two Yemen guys shoot two other guys across the border with Saudi bullets, that's okay. But if somebody trains a gun across the border and nails a Saudi guy, that's not okay? I mean, I'm looking for the rule book here. I don't know where it is.
Well, remember we talked earlier that the rules change in warfare. We started the show with that, talking about U-boats in World War II and the Revolutionary Army in the American Revolution. The rules keep changing. And whether you're fighting by proxy or not, I mean, that's been going on forever. Proxy wars, when you hire mercenaries from a different country so that your citizens don't catch the bullets.
Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war, is that the quote?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it seems like we almost fait accompli have to quite do something, Jeff. What does that even mean?
Sure. Well, I think a proportional response, back to Brendan's question, is probably in order. What does that mean? I don't know. You know, it's proportional. But we do have to do something. You know, I mean,
what if it actually did come from Yemen and are pissed off at getting killed by Saudis?
Well, you got to look to see if they have the capability of launching this type of an attack with these kind of weapons.
I think my son has the capability of launching this type of drone attacks. That's the problem with drone attacks is that they are, it's pretty accessible to not just governments, but also terrorist groups, organizations. That's a pretty pedestrian attack mode. And one
they said the technology was really low.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What? As our expert, as you just handed us a new Luckbox magazine, it looks pretty neat, by the way. As our expert, what does it take? I mean, obviously, the drones you and I buy for $150, they can't go that far, and they don't have that kind of payload. Are we talking about, I'm not a bomb maker, do you need a 50-pound payload, 100 pounds, 200?
I can't answer that, but I know that there are commercial drones right now used for delivery and used for surveillance purposes that are commercially available that anybody can get their hands on that would probably be able to hold a payload. So did they say what the payload was?
No, that's what I'm
trying to. I haven't seen that yet, but you're right. When you think about Amazon and delivery services, they're going to have some pretty big boxes that they're going to be delivering potentially through drones.
So they're essentially kamikaze drones. You bang them into the ground, and that's when the payload goes off?
Yeah, that's one of the backstories that hasn't bubbled up yet is that this is a... this will become a much more common mode of attack going forward, and how do you really prevent this? So
does that mean we can, since people can do this easy, are we going to fire all our TSA people? You don't have to blow yourself up anymore to kill anybody.
I think TSA is going to be around for a while.
I think you'll see a lot more of them now.
This is kind of scary, actually.
Sure.
I never was a big fan of these proxy wars, and. Where you just keep sending hardware down there when you know people are dying from it. I can't imagine what it's like living in Yemen, for God's sake. And the thing spills over. But what's even scarier is I'm not a big geographer kind of guy, but you take a look at the Middle East, the Persian Gulf, we don't have a lot of friends there anymore. I mean, if you scratch out Saudi Arabia, most people here are kind of lukewarm on them with their new leader. Look at the rest of the Gulf. You've got Syria, which is cesspool. You've got Iraq. I don't know if we can count on anybody there. Then you've got Iran. Then you've got like the Emirates, and I don't know what they've got. And even Turkey's not really on our side anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not like we have a... What do you think the status is of the other people that are still in the treaty with Iran?
I don't think they're very happy with us either right now.
No.
They're trying to hold that together for their own benefit and not tick us off violate the covenants.
It hasn't changed that much, though. Other than Saudi and Israel, there hasn't been a lot of love out there, and those have both been business decisions as well.
We actually were in better shape ally-wise when Saddam was alive. At least we counted him to hate the Iranians.
Sure. That's very true.
I mean, it's a...
Well, that's another type of proxy war, when you're supporting governments that can hold off your enemies.
Well, yeah, it's a, I wouldn't wish that whole Middle East thing on anybody. And then we got the thing going on in Afghanistan. What do you think the solution there is? Is there one?
In Afghanistan?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any good answer. I mean, I think eventually we're going to have to withdraw. But there's going to be a big vacuum.
Yeah.
Well, it may be another 20 years, but I think there's a desire. But nobody wants to have this be the next Vietnam where you can claim victory, but you know that you haven't had victory. And as soon as an opening happens, it may take 6 months or a year or 2 years, but there'll be another ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Taliban that steps into the void.
And
once that happens, we're going to be in a worse situation. The world is going to be in a worse situation than we are right now.
Well, do you think they can split it in half? You guys take one half and the other half move on to the 20th century?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think that's really been a mess. And it's, you know, if you go back to British colonialism, the Russians that went in there back in the 60s and 70s, like we were talking earlier, and now the U.S. involvement there, there's a lot of whipsawing back there that who do the Afghans trust? Who can they trust to look out for their interests? And I think that makes a very dangerous situation when you're not sure that anybody really would help you in your time of need. You really talk about being nationalist and being self-sufficient and going to war to protect your own interests. I think that's where the Afghan government is going to be for a long period of time, for their own survival.
Well, you know, we've got this magazine sitting in front of us. It says right on the front page, time for new rules. Why did Jeff know we were going to be talking about that this morning?
He's prescient.
What were the new rules I missed?
Well, no, I'm just saying right on your... Oh. We were talking about new rules for war.
Right.
How the idea about the submarines, that before that you supposedly couldn't mack
off a ship.
Because
submarines are new technology.
It was a new technology, and the British didn't have any.
Right.
So they were trying to outlaw it. And Brenner was certainly spot on with the... did you guys ever read the book that was the... predecessor of Gettysburg, or was it Killer Angels? Was that the name of it?
Don't know.
I believe it was, where they talked about the difference in warfare in Longstreet before the battle. Said he thought a guy behind a tree was worth four guys in the field, and yet in his mind they were still walking people out in the middle of the middle of the field and shooting at each other with cannon, and they couldn't believe. Plus, they had Gatling guns too, didn't they?
They had what?
Gatling guns,
I think. Yeah.
And he goes, the idea of doing that was just, made absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And how, the warfare obviously has continued to change with a certain amount of common sense. It was interesting about, if you ever read the George Marshall, the soldier and statesman, how the U.S. went over to World War One, all the French and British thought, here's more bodies we can throw at the machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
And our generals were like, no, we're not sending our guys a machine gun. You guys are idiots, basically.
Well, also just think about the uniforms. When we were talking about the Revolutionary War, where the farmers were hiding behind rocks and stone fences and trees, and the British were coming up with red coats and big white banners across their chest, forming an X in the middle of their chest. Can you give me a target?
Yeah, I mean, but even then with a musket, then you can never reload, but unbelievable. I really don't think we need a. But if there was an actual, a war there, how is it even going to be fought? And how do you fight somebody halfway around the globe with no allies?
Well, and how do you get supplies there? How do you maintain a supply chain?
Well, we just gonna,
when you get into the mountains, when you get into the mountains,
we're just going to nuke them, or what are we going to do?
It will get easier. There's credible advances in 3D printing that have occurred just within the last 3 weeks that now allow analysts to feel 100% confident that the ability to 3D print nuclear weapons is inevitable and within 5 to 10 years from now.
Well, I mean, but you can print them.
That's frightening.
But how do you get the...
That actually came out last week. That's a very new story. You can see that story on futurism.com right now, which is not a well-known platform, but one that is frequented by forward-thinking technologists and hardware manufacturers, and Futurism is covering, new technologies pretty well, and it's an interesting story that will get more attention.
But Chief, to your comment earlier about what's the future of TSA, if there's this capability coming on, TSA is completely worthless at that point.
Well, right. I mean, you don't have to kill yourself now to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
That means I
or can. You don't have to. Yeah.
I can take water on the plane now.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, well, we're always fighting the last war.
Yeah.
And we're good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And well, all generals have been.
That's right.
You know. You just
see, laws are the same way. Laws are always retrospective. They try to close the loophole that existed yesterday. They're not looking for the loophole that's going to exist tomorrow.
Why does everybody think that this stuff, I mean, when I say the technology's new, yes, you guys know more about that than me, certainly Jeff does, but the people are still the same. And the actual, the way this all works and how people are going to think old and somebody comes along and thinks new, but the population pressures, the economic pressures, are right, they are there. It reminds me very much from what I read of the era behind, before World War I, where we've got an arms race, which this certainly is now. It's an arms race, but it's not high tech, it's low tech, right, Jeff? Which is even, I don't know, it's probably more dangerous. And, you got a low tech arms race, you got population pressures, you got economic pressures. Like, could there be a stew, that you don't want like that?
Right. Well, high tech is much more dangerous just because of the mass casualty capacity that new weaponry has, and the ability, you know, drones can simply easily spread chemical warfare.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. These are, you know, we have much bigger issues ahead of us. In fact, you know, we're working on our, even though we have new issues sitting in front of us, we're working on our next one right now, and it is focused on futurism issues, and we're looking at futurism trends, but we had to step back a little bit and say, you know, let's give an assessment first of climate change and that's impact and global military conflicts even before we talk about what things might look like in 20 years from now with advanced technology, because those are the two, and God forgive me for using the phrase again, but those are the existential threats that are in front of us. You know, what are the uncertainty with respect to what climate change, how it will reveal itself over the next couple decades, and that
I don't think it's even going to take that long.
And that mathematically, the probability for extreme global military conflict is increasing day by day. In fact, we're doing a statistical study based on some research done by a number of world organizations showing the technology capabilities from a military standpoint, how they're increasing, how they haven't been utilized yet, and what the potential is. So those two are our big threats.
And, mm-hmm.
And we try to draw no conclusion because nobody else has successfully yet as to how imminent either of those might be, whether it be climate change like you're suggesting or a military conflict. But they're certainly the two threats that exist before we start thinking about a Jetson life, you know, 20 years from now.
Jeff, what, my background, I mean, I'd like to have a little bit more of yours with more of the technologists, because I actually love that stuff, even though I'm a total Luddite. The economic piece, I mean, you see it in this country. You see everybody, before you get on a financial show, you've got to genuflect and say how great the economy is. And I look at the economy and I don't see it great at all. I see people from 70th percentile down doing nothing but going more and more in debt. Even though their lifestyle might be better and their medical might be better, I mean, way better than it was 30 years ago. I mean, you have a chance of surviving cancer, and if you have a heart problem, pretty much you can survive unless you get down in one heap. A lot of things are better, but you look at some of the income, boy, 2000, the median net income per person was 30, and now it's 33. I mean, we're not even close to spreading some of this around. And to me, it's getting worse. It's not like I clearly am no socialist, but the idea that we have incredible things in place where we have, you know, less and less industries or companies in every industry, it appears. We have a greater, growth of this management class we don't seem to be able to control. Even the shareholders can't control. I mean, they're more powerful than, and I can only imagine what it's like in Venezuela. I mean, how the hell do you live there? I mean, there's no cash. How do you even get on a bus? I mean, what do you do? Give the guy a pack of cigarettes? Or, I mean, I don't even know how you, look at, I mean, what do you think it's like living in Yemen? I mean, talk about, you know, destitute places. I mean, there's so many of these places around. Can't be a bowl of roses in Afghanistan. I mean, no wonder people are pissed off at everybody. I don't know. I wouldn't be the one to be out shooting, but there's pressures all over the place, I think. And a lot of it is economic, I think. And that only kind of feeds into what you're talking about.
Well, you have to use some sort of benchmarks, right? And I, while I agree with your premise that the manner in which the economy is reflected by virtue of inflation is inaccurate because the two major expenses of increasing education...
Can you hold that thought and write it down because we don't want to lose that one. S&P futures down 450, NASDAQ futures down 900. When we came in, we'll be right back with Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. She is our girl, Angelica, on the phone. Angelica on the phone. Angelica,
yes,
Vlasenko, correct?
Yes.
We wonder why we shortened that up. I have to go with AV in you. Just for the, you have to give you like a studio name. We'll think of something good, you know. S&P futures up 575, NASDAQ futures up, I'm sorry, down 575, NASDAQ futures down 1450. We had a brief stint an hour ago where they were up a little bit, but this is right where we were when they came in, so we're kind of hanging right there. Dow down 55. Individual stocks moving, not very much. Well, we've got Caterpillar up 84 cents, Goldman Sachs down 122, and we've got Home Depot down 337. Yesterday was the oil stocks up, the airline stocks down, some of the transportation was down because of the oil, the flip in the oil. Oil today down 84 cents. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 54.4%. FTSE's actually up 7. It's 0.1%. CAC around up 5, down 5, call that one flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 13, call that flat. China, however, down pretty heavy. Shanghai down 52, that's 1.7%. Hang Seng down 334, 1.2%. I would say most of the Saudi oil now probably goes to the Far East more than it does here. I don't think we import too much Saudi oil, but not positive. I think we have most of ours from Mexico and Canada, stuff that we are still importing. Bonds, 1.81. The Bund, minus 0.48. Again, it's down up 30 basis points from the minus 0.79 I saw a couple weeks ago. Japan 10 years, minus 0.15 after being minus 0.24 for like a really long time. The I said oil is down a whole 8 cents, 80 cents, sorry. And what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports? Are you there, baby? She's talking to somebody.
Hello.
What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
The weather today in Chicago is really cloudy with a lot of chances of the rain. Current weather is 65 degrees with a high of 77 and a low of 64. Seems like it's a beautiful and sunny day in Phoenix, Arizona, with the highest 100 degrees Fahrenheit and the lowest 79. Well, the traffic volume seems to be more intense right now as we have a new accident reported involving pedestrian on the Lakeshore Drive North and the Jackson Drive.
That can't be good.
No victims reported, though. A lot of road constructions, bridge work going on right now throughout Chicago. Higgins Road West reduced to one lane between Canfield and Oriole Avenue. Road constructions on Kennedy Expressway right lane is closed on the 64 roads on North Avenue West between Magnolia and Kennedy Expressway. Big delays on Eisenhower from Melrose Park to downtown. Sports. White Sox lost to Twins 3-5. Cubs beat Reds 8-2. And Diamondbacks beat Martins 7-5. Chief?
Would you say that AB is not the biggest sports fan on earth?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I just need to hang out more with you guys.
Hang out more with us? Well, there's positives of that, and there's probably negatives of that, too, I think. Yeah.
All you have to do is know about Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's oh, by the way, 13.5, Georgia, what do you guys think?
I think it's going to be a bloodbath. I don't think it's going to be even close.
I'm kind of with you on that. Although,
I agree. Yeah.
You think Georgia in the same class as Clemson and Alabama?
I think they may be a half step behind them. But I don't think, like we, as you made a point earlier in the show when Joel was on, that I don't think those three teams, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia, are head and shoulders above everybody else. And I don't think Notre Dame should be ranked as high as they are based on what they've shown so far this year. Even with their big victory over this weekend, they made a lot of mistakes, and they didn't look that good.
But who, by the way, I 100% agree with you. As you know, I'm not a Notre Dame bleeding heart, but I will. Who else belongs up there, though? Ohio State doesn't look like they're their usual self. I mean, I look at the rest of their schedule. I mean, they're probably a little better than Southern Cal. I think they're better than Stanford now. I don't think they're that good. I'm just saying, other than the big three or four we're talking about in the SEC and the SEC, I mean, who's there?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. So maybe under that analysis, Notre Dame could be in the top 10, but. You know, they don't look like a really strong team right now.
Well, I think there's the top three or four, like we said, and then there's, they could easily be in the top 10 of the rest of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're, and who wouldn't they be a match for other than those three? I think they beat Texas.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma, Nebraska's they're no good anymore. Penn State is back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Michigan clearly, they're just okay. It does seem like every five-star recruit is going to three places, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and they're stacked.
Well, this one kid at Purdue is a serious talent, right? Now, where'd they get him? The wide receiver? But then he got hurt 2 weeks mm-hmm. ago? The kid who was a freshman year last year, he broke all the records as a receiver as a freshman? And I mean, there's guys around, but it seems like they're around because the other dudes missed them.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you'd be starting to move. You finish your thought, by the way, because I said hold on to that thought, so finish it up.
Oh, well, that thought was you frequently make mention of the fact that you believe that the economy is not doing as well as reported by the general statistics, and I think the underlying premise there is that inflation is higher than it's reported to be because of the costs of education and healthcare and pharmaceuticals that are not being accurately reflected in CPIs and other inflationary measurements.
Well, I also think that the schooling, since most people pay for it through property taxes that have gone up dramatically, is not reflected because property taxes are not even in the index.
Right. But my point to that would be, while that may be true, you still need benchmarks. And from our benchmarks, and using the same benchmarks, the economy is doing pretty well on an overall basis, certainly much better than it was 5 years ago. I mean, whether it's unemployment or new employment or the markets or whatever measures that are conventionally used, you can't abandon them because they're still have value on a relative basis, and the economy's in a better position. You know, so do those numbers mask problems and vulnerabilities? Without question. But at the same time, I think you cannot make an argument that the economy is not distinctly better off than it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, but every month, by the way, I love the pushback, because you are right. You can't, and therein lies the conundrum. You can't throw out the old, you're trying to make the CPI act like it 10 years ago so you can compare era to era. You know, that's your goal.
Yeah.
And yet, by the same token, you sort of can't be blind to what's happening.
Exactly.
And so I don't know how if I've said, Brennan's been here, I wouldn't want the job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the little stuff. I don't know how you deal with it. If all of a sudden, I don't know exactly where you live, but if all of a sudden I'm your alderman and your mayor, and I say, all right, Jeff, it's going to cost you $1,000 to park in front of your house. Okay. Now it's not in the index. All right. So now maybe I put it in the index, maybe I don't. But the first year it's zero. So now it's in there. And now all of a sudden if we leave it alone for 10 years, now it's actually a drag on inflation because it doesn't go up.
Right.
But we never actually grabbed the first 1,000. I mean, I don't know how you get there. You know what I'm saying?
But someone paid it. Right.
Somebody paid it. And then all of a sudden, not only that, if it comes 1,000 out of your yearly pay, there's 1,000 less to spend on the other stuff, which means the demand for the other things that we do on account is now less. So it doesn't surprise me that the demand for, sport coats, the demand for new TVs and everything is down because this $1,000 came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, so I mean, it's very difficult to, on an economic spot, to try and keep track of all this. And I just, very simple money, and I'm asking, I'm certainly not speeching here. Last month, the income numbers were 0.1, and the sales were up 0.5. Alright, so, to me is, there's 0.4 on a credit card. I mean, it's the only way the numbers are gonna add up. Or, if you see most of the increase in sales was in automobiles, and I looked at the average car is 31.6, and the average loan is 29.8. Did those people really buy it, or didn't they?
Right.
I mean, there's stuff that is coming up here. We're at the extremes on a lot of ends, and you actually hear people on TV say, people are confident about the future, they're willing to borrow more. And you and I and Brendan are maybe a little different era, saying, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. All we know is they're borrowing more dough. So I mean, there's things here that are confusing me. Would I like to go back to the world where I could look at the CPI from 5 years ago and the one today and say they match up like you wanted to and I wanted to? The answer is yes. I'm starting to see the holes growing, shall we say.
Sure.
I mean, was it Carl Denninger said he went back and according to the CPI, since 2000, the price of a Ford F-150 has not gone up with the quality improvements. Now, you and I, you being a tech dude, yes, there's some quality improvements, but how do you go from 12.5 to 28 and say it's the same price? It's the same truck. You're still driving a box around the back of it, right?
It's actually in the current issue of Luckbox that the Ford F-Series sold. It was the highest-selling car and truck in America last year, up 4.9% unit-wise at 451,000 units sold in 2018. Up 5% on a year-over-year basis.
If you added the GMCs and the Chevys together, is Ford still more?
The Chevy Silverado was second at 291,000 units, so that's 150,000 units lower behind the Ford F-Series.
Where's the GMCs? Because they're the same plant, obviously.
Well, let's see. Ram pickup, Nissan Rogue, Toyota RAV4, Honda, Toyota Camry.
They're down way down the page.
Yeah, they're way down the page. Right. Yeah, the Ram pickup was number three.
Which ones do you like the best?
I don't like any of them. I don't like any of the cars on the list. Right. In fact, right now my favorite is Uber.
I'm a Chevy pickup guy. I like the Chevys better. You know what? The Fords are too tall. They can't get in half the garages.
They are tall. There's no question.
And but people swear by the brand they have. Yeah. I will say this, if you do the survey, if you drive in the morning from the north side, you go by the General Iron plant where all the guys of many nationalities are lined up with the pickups that are all 25 years old.
Yeah.
90% of them are Chevys.
That's Chevy?
Yeah. You'll see a couple of Toyotas. You rarely see a Dodge. They rust out, and the Fords don't seem to hang in there either. So if you take that as your survey, I think the Chevys were simpler, especially the 90s ones. I think you'd fix them anywhere, so I think that was part of it. But we've talked about issues overseas here, a potential war. We've got if somebody plunked you in the Oval Office tomorrow, Jeff or Brent, what's the first job you would attack? I mean, like if you're putting together a car, you're the manufacturing engineer, and says the first thing you do is take this part and this part, and you bolt them together, and that's how you start. How would you start at this point?
Well, you want to take all the global issues off the table?
Yeah, just to say domestically.
Domestically, I would say infrastructure and technology are the two things that need to be addressed immediately. Oh, no, it's and healthcare costs and education. No, I'm.
Yeah, I go first with healthcare. I go first with healthcare.
I agree. It's a big job. And
what would you do there?
And that's a problem. I think your question actually is indicative of a problem we all often have is that, you know, our legislators, lawmakers, they have to walk and chew gum at the same time. There isn't one issue. Yet the irony is that you have never heard a presidential historian that hasn't said that a president can only accomplish one great thing over his 4-year term. Well, that's something systemic with our system right there, because we just rattled off a lot of serious things that need to be addressed: education, healthcare costs, technology, privacy, and surveillance abuses. There's real crumbling infrastructure, right? So if you could only address one big thing,
but I think it starts with healthcare. I really think, and I think that there should be universal coverage. Now, whether you look upon it as being Medicare for all or private insurance or something else, those are ways to get to the end result. But I think universal health care coverage has to be first and foremost on the list, and at reasonable costs. When you look at the increase in health care costs over the last 20 years, it's unsustainable for most people. And when you look at the amount of money that pharmaceuticals have risen in the last 20 years, that's also unsustainable for most folks. And I think trying to narrow those to make sure that everybody or most people are insured and that there's a reasonable cost for pharmaceuticals, because it also has a ripple effect when you're talking about how much are people's incomes rising or not rising, how much of that is being eaten up by out-of-pocket deductibles and for medications.
I would I could be totally wrong on this. Matter of fact, you wouldn't try. I mean, obviously, everybody trying to solve something like this. I think we need something like we did in the early 70s, where we economically, a lot of what you guys have mentioned, now to me, they're all the same issue. We've let areas become non-competitive. The idea that people are paying $6,000 for MRIs when we know that if the place is run properly and you use it 24 hours a day, they would be $650 or $700. I don't think it really matters whether the health care is universal coverage or whatever it is. The fact is there's $5,000 there that's being wasted someplace. And I think whatever it is.
Well, it may not be wasted. It's going into somebody's pocket.
Well,
so is that being wasted?
Well, but I'm saying it's a discontinuity. It's way too high. It's like me charging 20 cents a share for trades.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't need to be there. I mean, mm-hmm. Competitively, you could never justify it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the same thing that you were talking about, Jeff, with the pharmaceuticals. Well, okay, are we going to redo the patent laws and say 17 years is an awful long time? And oh, by the way, no matter what it is, if it's something that's necessary, 4 times what it costs to pay, to make it, 10 times, some sort of number where a polio shot isn't $5,000 when people are making $3,000, you know, as a policeman like my dad was in 1955. So there needs to be some governor on something that is a patent is given. I mean, I think at some point here, we had somebody, Carl was saying, and he's a serious conservative. Well, the government almost has to be part of, since they were part of screwing up the competitive landscape, they almost have to be part of putting it back together.
That's the issue of Luckbox sitting in front of you. It really is. That's what the issue is really focused on, even though it's focused.
No, I didn't read it before it came off, like the guys in Wisconsin where they got spanked for reading Business Week the day before it came out and trading on it. Can you imagine them actually prosecuting those guys?
Yeah, how about
two schmucks from the plant? Right. They never made a dime.
Yeah, that's true.
Where did Business Week become a market-moving document, for that's God's
true.
Sake?
That's right.
But, I mean, I think there, if you have a whole plan, first thing you do is you stop all these mergers.
Well, and just to finish that thought, that is the discussion in this issue. It's about anti-competitive practices and a Justice Department that's been basically asleep at the wheel with respect to anti-competitive practices across all industries, and looking at a little bit as to how that happened from the Clayton Act and the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Jeff, do you think they're asleep or they're controlled?
Well, they're controlled. You know, we talk extensively about the lobby. You know, Facebook and Amazon and Google now have the largest lobbies, and they're spending more lobbying money than healthcare companies and gun companies, which have actually very small lobbies relative to big tech. So, you know, there's that influence. I mean, look at the Justice Department on Monday of last week. Not the Justice Department, but 50 states and jurisdictions got together and announced an investigation into the anti-competitive practices of Google. The only two states that did not join the jurisdictions were California and Alabama, because they both have large Google headquarters. So so there's an indication of control right there. But the power and the economic influence they wield is material. But you know, there hasn't been, since AT&T, right, since the breakup of the baby bills, there hasn't been material antitrust legislation or initiatives for quite a long time. And I think that's changing. It's definitely changing in Europe. The European Union in the last year has fined Google $1.7 billion, $2.1 billion, and $5.1 billion.
And Trump change.
Well, yes and no.
I agree. I mean, I'm just
saying.
No,
but you're right. I mean, if Facebook fined... the FTC, in its largest settlement ever 2 months ago, fined Facebook $5 billion for Cambridge Analytica's fiasco. But that $5 billion is 27 days' income for Facebook. So it is chump change. And talk about a slap on the wrist. They gave him blanket immunity to Zuckerberg for all prior indiscretions.
And that's why the stock rallied. That's the kicker. When you're allowing for immunity or granting immunity for actions in the past,
right.
It doesn't matter what the financial hit is.
Especially when you don't even know what the actions are. So let's just say Brennan with his new wheels, or you if you decide to go buy a truck, and you go get like a parking ticket, which of course you guys would never get. So instead of paying the city $2, the fine's going to be $75. Totally different formula than what Facebook is spanked with, I'm saying. Like you just mentioned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
What if we found out they stole $5 billion and the fine was 37 times that, like it would be the mm-hmm. parking ticket?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Not to mention, in the case of the parking ticket, you often don't get notice of the parking ticket for several weeks. And if you don't pay for it in a very short period of time after that, there's a penalty involved in that, which either close to doubles the fee for it. And if you challenge it and you lose, you've got to pay additional costs. But you're right. I mean, oftentimes we get caught up in the dollar amount, like a fine of $5 billion. Well, that sounds like a lot of money until you realize that it's 20 days or 25 days of income for them. And all of a sudden, it doesn't seem like a whole lot.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to run this by Jeff. One of the dumbest things I didn't do as an investor is I watched Microsoft at $35 for years. Yeah. And once...
Let's not do those stories.
But once Google and once these other guys started becoming the Facebook for antitrust, I'm going to say the single biggest monopolist in our lifetime is Microsoft. They're totally under the radar since then, and the stock's up 5 times. Mm-hmm. You know, everything they've done has been anti-competitive. They combine this place, that place. They put MapQuest out of business. They put, God help you. I mean, if you don't use Microsoft, I'm still paying the guys 5 hours a month for Microsoft Office. I mean,
Now it's Facebook and Google and Amazon that have taken over that. You know, Facebook's had 70 acquisitions in the last 5 years, and, the acquisitions of all of those three are basically to, you know, preserve or to prevent competition against their models. And Microsoft was a leader, but they've been taken over by three. The one who seems to be getting the tech company that seems to have it right is Apple, even though they're very vulnerable with respect to their practices on the iTunes platform, which distinctly favors in search results all of their owned and operated apps. Everything else that Apple is doing is really privacy driven right now, whereas the other companies aren't looking that way.
What's sort of a question? We just we only got a couple minutes, and I'm gonna lob one out there for next time that we kick it around next Tuesday. But actually, Brennan's gonna be in Berlin running a marathon next Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. And what number marathon is this for you?
99.
That's awesome.
Wow.
99th marathon.
Now you got to finish. You can't be a Rosie Ruiz.
I know.
And claim it. You know.
I know. I'm not claiming it in advance.
But
I'm attempting my 99th marathon.
Why do you suppose that the state and the city, if you have a parking ticket, they'll come find you in the can for that thing? Yeah. They showed up here. Get a little of this. They showed up at PTI, some guy like 3 years ago, wanted to know of all the stuff we bought. And I usually stop out into the Sam's Club in Hodgkins, because there aren't any Sam's Clubs in the city. And I buy some stuff there. They were going to hit us with a fine for buying our stuff outside the city and dodging on the state tax. Fortunately, everything is listed in the we were able to get all the receipts. And since 60% of it was food, we ducked under the number by like $5 or they were going to fine us. How is it that everybody in the state doesn't pay their taxes on Amazon and they never go after anybody? Are they afraid to find Pritzker or Rauner's names of their wife on the list or what? How is it that there's a massive get there in terms of taxes? I'm not saying they should. I'm not saying they want to come after anybody I know. But how do they forget that one when they chase you up and down and everything else?
Yeah.
Are they afraid of who's going to be on the list?
Are you sure that's the reason they came looking for you, Chief?
I think because I say stuff like this? I don't know. No, what I'm saying, who decides who you go after or who you don't? I mean, whatever. We can talk about that one further. Thank you, guys. I learned a lot about that. And by the way, I think everybody should grab this new luck box. Plus, I love the cover. Time for new rules. Whatever, that's a possibility. Well, I'm going to read this thing, and we'll talk about it next week.
Sounds good.
S&P futures down 450, NASDAQ futures down 775. We'll be back tomorrow on Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer? I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.